Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a bit of a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. And one of the people in the front line of that fight, with whom we have the privilege of consulting periodically, is Dr. Barry Rubin. He is the director of the Gloria Center in Herzliya and a man who has written extensively and commented profoundly on the challenges that the free world, more generally, and specifically its front line, Israel, are confronting at the moment. And Barry, it's great to have a chance to visit with you a bit. As we are speaking, of course, there has been a very serious conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. Give us a sense, if you would, as to the background to this episode. This is not a one-off problem, is it?
You know, first and foremost, it's a sign of the extraordinarily weird world we live in today. I mean, just consider briefly that a terrorist group which calls for genocide against its neighbor and attacks its neighbor seized control of a place in violation of an internationally recognized agreement, that is the Oslo Agreement. And nobody in the world is prepared to say this is an illegitimate, you know, regime and it's repressing its people, terrorism, we chased out the Christians, they're attacking Israel. And this regime, therefore, should be brought down. And we will support that. It's not on the table. And I think that the Gaza situation, you know, is a perfect example, as I say, of the just really bizarre international situation that we face today. Now, having said that, what's going on right now is absolutely precisely the same as what happened in late 2008, and that is that at a certain point of time, through recklessness or design, Hamas started shooting so many rockets in Israel and carrying out so many cross-border attacks that Israel decided it absolutely had to respond and defend itself militarily. What are Israel's options, though? I mean, and no one here, I think, has illusions about the situation. Israel, number one, Israel does not want to go into Gaza, take it over, and run it. Israel was involved in that. And even though that might stop the firing of rockets, it would involve Israel in fighting every day. Two, Israel could take it over, bang up Hamas, and turn it over to someone else. Well, who? The Palestinian Authority? An international consortium or something? Well, no one would take it. So you're basically left with no options. Although I have to say that when I was traveling just now, the cab driver said to me, and I quote, translating in English, wave of way if they were get a state. And I thought that was a sort of a good kind of sense of, you know, the Israeli interpretation. I mean, you know, Israel withdrew from Gaza and this is what happened. So there are no good options. The good option is go in, do damage, force them to stop high levels of rockets and shelling for a while. And then, but with the knowledge that, you know, at some point you have to face doing the whole thing over again. That's the reality. There's nothing mistaken in that. I mean, that's what exists. And as I say, I don't think there are any illusions about that reality.
Barry, let me ask you about this. One of the things that obviously is new in this equation since 2008 is the role of the Muslim Brotherhood throughout the region,
right,
but most especially in Egypt. You have written
sense,
the book
it
literally
happened
on it.
Yet.
Well, tell us what role you see.
It hasn't happened yet, and this was, I think, Hamas's biggest mistake. Of course, not really a mistake because they want they want civilian casualties and damage and blaming Israel and stuff. But their mistake was their timing. They didn't consult Egypt. This week, literally, Egypt has been negotiating almost $10 billion in aid from the U.S., from the European Union, and from the IMF. This is not, and they're working on their constitution. They're still purging the army, and they haven't really established the parliament yet as legitimate. So Egypt does not want a war right now, and they are not prepared, at least at this point, to give Hamas enthusiastic support. So they are, you know, basically trying to get out of it without any involvement. Now, in a year or two, things might be different, but it's too early. So for all practical purposes, then, the Muslim Brotherhood aspect has not yet kicked in. If this goes on for a long time, then maybe they'll feel compelled to play that game. But as of now, not. And they have been genuinely trying to broker a ceasefire. They've tried to be helpful. And, of course, Hamas doesn't want a ceasefire because they want to play the old game of using the veto of being the most militant, you know, and profiting off of that and, you know, incurring casualties on themselves, you know, and all of this, these characteristics that I call the suicide strategy, which is, you know, help me or I'll kill myself.
Right. Barry, let me ask you about one of the other players in the region that is seemingly facilitating this suicide strategy or encouraging it at the very least, and that is the Turkish regime of Recep Tayyip Erdogan. What are they up to? They've denounced Israel as a terrorist state, as you know. Are they aiding and abetting Hamas in this? And in so doing, are they at cross purposes with Egypt? And does that surprise you?
Well, this is not the first time this has ever happened. But again, that's part of the bizarre nature of the situation. Here is a regime which has given Hamas thoroughgoing support and, as you say, attacks Israel, a member of NATO, and President Barack Obama's favorite Muslim country, and which has been reported, and I'm honestly not sure if this has been confirmed, that it's going to be the first place he visits. And then he's never going to visit Israel. I mean, Obama's favorite Middle Eastern leader is the prime minister who said this. So here you have a country which is, you know, undermining U.S. goals and yet being treated royally by the U.S. Now, what happened at the State Department some days ago is that an AP reporter basically hectored the State Department spokesman, or spokeswoman at the time.
Yes, right.
Until she would say that we find the Turkish statement not helpful. So they said it, but anybody reports that they said it, you know, might be leaving out the fact that the only reason they said it was because they literally were nagged until they did.
Yeah, it was the most grudging and understated of condemnations, and it really speaks. And Barry, again, one of the things that we value about your contributions to this program is your background in monitoring these various Islamists and their agendas. It really raises afresh this whole question of whether it's not just Israel that is being betrayed by an erstwhile friend, if not ally, in Turkey, but that the United States as well and NATO properly advised to be seeing Turkey as an ally in that sense.
Right. There's actually a long list of specific things, starting with the Iraq War and the refusal to let American forces enter, which, I mean, if there had been nothing else, you could have explained away, but followed, for example, by the Turkish regime's sabotage of the sanctions on Iran, going and cutting a separate deal, saying that the Turkish government does not believe that Iran is trying to get nuclear weapons, and being given, by the way, a total immunity from sanctions by the U.S. government. So, yes, the Turkish government can get away with anything. But then anybody can get away with anything, with this U.S. government.
Barack Obama administration.
The problem is, it's just part of the bizarreness for me is having to follow this on a daily basis and then hearing people say, oh, there's no problem. The Obama administration, policy is you know, perfectly good and reasonable. And
the triumph of hope over experience, I think.
A long list of evidence to the contrary.
To the contrary, indeed. Barry, we have to let you go at that. Thank you very much for joining us, as always. Stay safe in Israel. It's very much on our minds, and you are all in our prayers. Barry Rubin, the director of the Gloria Center in Herzliya, and the author, among other things, of Israel, An Introduction, and The Muslim Brotherhood, the Organization and Policies of a Global Islamist Movement. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll look forward to talking with you again very soon.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, the adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
You'll be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying we're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, joined as we are each week by my friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Executive Vice President and former member of Congress, Fred Grandy, for a bit of a week in review. Fred, we were just talking with Barry Rubin in his report from the front lines of the struggle in Israel at the moment. Talk to me a bit, as you see it, about what's the sort of political posture of the United States vis-a-vis Israel and the struggle, really struggle to the death that it is engaged in with Hamas and other Islamists now very much feeling their oats.
Well, I think one of the reasons they're feeling their oats, and I'm not just talking about Hamas, but obviously they've seen incursions on the Syrian border. There's jihadist activity in the Sinai from Egypt. Possible even Muslim Brotherhood uprisings, or at least strengthening of their coalition in Jordan as well. So Israel is pretty much surrounded. But I think all of this has to do with the fact that most of these groups are emboldened by Obama's reelection, and a lot of this is testing whether or not our resolve in defending
the country that's been our strongest ally in the Middle East, certainly since the late 40s, is still our strongest ally, or whether we're essentially kicking them to the curb.
Yeah. As a former member of Congress, an astute observer of the political scene, Fred, I wondered what you make of the report. I know you spoke with him last week about it, that Adam Credo filed concerning the character of the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives, increasingly seeming aligned with, the Obama administration itself in antipathy towards Israel. This is quite a change from its historic position. Does that contribute to the problem that Israel is facing, and for that matter, that we're facing, do you think?
Well, absolutely, and I think that you're going to probably see more of this as we go forward, but a lot of this is indicative of a lot of Jewish voters themselves in this last election, Frank, who apparently, by supporting Obama, were voting against the state of Israel. And I'm not completely sure at this point who the strong Republican allies would be. Unfortunately, I think Israel has been successfully portrayed by this administration and their allies in Congress as, to some degree, a false friend of the United States, and as Islamist organizations in the United States, such as CARE and the Islamic Society of North America, flex their muscles and become a lot stronger, they I think add to the hostility to Israel as well. The other point I would make is that no friend of Israel and a member of Congress, Keith Ellison from Minnesota, who is in lockstep with CARE, is currently hosting one of the top undersecretaries from the State Department out in Minnesota on a kind of Islamophobia tour. So you'd have to ask yourself, if the State Department is now going to Minneapolis on diplomatic missions, what does that say about our future relations with Israel as well?
Yeah, well, presumably one of the things it reflects is the fact that we now have a huge and increasingly, I'm sorry to say, influential population of unassimilated Somalis in Minnesota, brought there, let's be clear, by the State Department, Fred Grandy, and to the United Nations, and now contributing to our polity, not simply by bringing people like Keith Ellison, truly a Muslim brother, if ever there were one, certainly in his affinities, if not in terms of literally his membership, to political office in this country. It's very alarming. Fred, one other thing I wanted to cover with you in light of the developments this week was sort of the after action of what your former colleagues did with respect to investigations of Benghazi Gate, the scandal associated with the attack on not our consulate, a diplomatic mission in Libya,
right.
And specifically, Fred, something that I talked with our dear friend Diana West about earlier this week, namely both the question of who took out of the so-called talking points that were widely used by the administration, any reference to a terrorist attack in connection with that episode, and at least as interesting and perhaps much more important, really, who put into those talking points this this false and highly misleading meme about this was all a function of some video that nobody had seen.
Well, to the first question, the fingers seem to be pointing at James Clapper, the director of National Intelligence, although he is obviously denied that. If he is indeed culpable, I think he was probably told that by people inside the White House, and your guess is as good as mine as to who that would be, whether it would be the president himself or Valerie Jarrett or some of the people that...
John Brennan, perhaps?
John Brennan.
Right.
Although I'm not sure John Brennan is higher up in the food chain than James Clapper, but I don't know that for certain. But certainly Brennan would be somebody who would be inclined to do that based on what he has said about the... he's on record as talking about the salutary nature of jihad.
Yeah.
No, so I would put him high
struggle.
Up on the suspect list. As far as the video, I have to believe this has probably some sources in the State Department, Frank, because let's not forget that while we're talking about Benghazi and the aftermath and who knew what when, the administration and principally the State Department has been negotiating with the Organization of Islamic Cooperation over codifying blasphemy laws that make speaking ill of Islam a crime, and nothing is probably a better example of that than this bogus video. And let's not forget that as soon as this thing came out, both the president and Hillary Clinton were on TV in Pakistan apologizing for it. So to me, this is part and parcel of advancing the OIC's agenda, which happens to perhaps coincide with the events in Benghazi. But I think this is an issue that is potentially as troubling as what we may learn about what happened on the night of September 11th in Libya.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, Fred. And I think, in fact, this is a far more important story, really. Why is this administration so determined to advance an agenda promoted by the Muslim Brotherhood that is so clearly at odds with our First Amendment freedoms? And I just think that the public has a need to know about this, and I pray that the Congress will examine this underlying policy of embracing the Islamists and their agenda, not simply focus on sort of the various particulars of this episode in Benghazi, of which it's really a symptom. Fred, also in that regard, 97 members of the House of Representatives, all Republicans, led by Congressman John Duncan, had an interesting initiative vis-a-vis a woman who was very much involved in propounding this false meme about the video. Tell us about that.
Well, of course, you're talking about Susan Rice, who is the ambassador to the UN, was the first one out of the gate, kind of the designated acolyte for the administration to get out and say the events in Libya were all instigated by this Innocence of Muslims video, which, of course, was a falsehood from the get-go and was quickly proven wrong, even though the administration essentially stayed with this story for 2 weeks, and Rice herself gave no less than 5 interviews. Well, 97 members of the House have said she is totally unacceptable as a candidate for Secretary of State. Now, of course, the House has no vote in advising and consent on presidential appointments, but that still is a pretty strong statement in opposition. I have a notion about this, Frank, that I may be wrong on, but some of the people I've talked to are saying the administration will probably offer John Kerry's name in nomination for Secretary of State and possibly move Rice to National Security Advisor. I'm hoping that's wrong, but I could see this as a consolation prize if they think the heat's on Susan Rice to the point where it might be an embarrassing confirmation hearing for her.
Well, it will certainly be a teachable moment, and frankly, wherever they put her will be a disaster. And I don't look with much pleasure at the prospect of John Kerry being the Secretary of State either, but
no.
We'll be following all of it closely with you, Fred Grandy, as well as with our other guests here at Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you for your insights, as always, and especially for helping us illuminate what's going on with this, what I call Obama war. That is beginning,
exactly.
And I'm afraid will be upon us before we know it. Fred, I hope you stay well, and we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, we'll get our update from the Langley Intelligence Group Network, from its founder, Fred Flight. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Fred Flights, one of our featured guests here at Secure Freedom Radio, a man who I have come to know over the years by dint of his extraordinary expertise in matters involving the United States national security and intelligence communities. He worked in the Central Intelligence Agency as a career analyst for almost two decades and then held positions in the State Department and up on Capitol Hill that further enhanced his stature and his acumen in these matters. He now runs, as the managing editor, the Langley Intelligence Group Network, known as LIGNET. You can find it at lignet.com. It's a resource we make use of here at Secure Freedom Radio all the time, and delighted to have you with us, Fred. As always, I appreciate very much you finding a few minutes for us. Fred, let's talk a little bit about what's going on with respect to Israel. We've been covering it throughout the program, but I'd be interested in your perspective, particularly in light of some very interesting conversations you've had with two other esteemed colleagues of ours, Daniel Pipes of the Middle East Forum and David Wormser, a former colleague of yours and mine in several capacities. What are we to make of the tough choices that Israel is facing, and where do you think it's going to go from here?
Well, this week there was what the news services were saying. There was going to be a ceasefire, and there still may be a ceasefire by the time that this discussion airs, although I am very skeptical. LIGNET didn't think there was going to be a ceasefire because there seems to be a clear effort by Hamas leaders to use this conflict with Israel to undermine Israel's international reputation, to enrage the Arab world, and to win new friends throughout the Arab world, and get itself recognition and additional funding. There really has been a callous disregard for life by Hamas leaders in this whole conflict, which is making it difficult for Israel to negotiate. Hamas leaders are running out and saying all kinds of outrageous things, that Israel's ready to cave, Israel's ready for a ceasefire, and Israeli officials are saying, well, that's really not the case at all. So Israel has a difficult choice right now. We've seen new tactics this week of Hamas sending salvos of missiles to overcome Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. There was a bus bombing in Tel Aviv this week. So Israel is facing the challenge. How long does it give in to Western pressure to give peace a chance or negotiations before it has to launch a ground invasion? It's a very troubling situation for them.
Yeah. And David Wormser was specifically talking about evidence of an Iranian connection to what the folks in Hamasstan, as I like to think of it, are up to. Specifically, of course, we've seen missiles that have been developed by the Iranians, the so-called Fajr 5s, used. Fred, what's your sense as a career intelligence professional of the Iranian hand in this?
Well, we interviewed Dave Wormser, who was in Tel Aviv this week, and he, during the discussion, I hope your viewers will log on to LinkedIn to watch the fascinating interview with Dr. Wormser. And he said this current conflict actually began a few weeks ago when Israel took out a missile factory in Sudan, which we believe is Iranian-controlled, and was making longer-range missiles to send to Israel. Now, some of the missiles that Israel has used, according to Wormser, that had been fired against Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, could not have been homemade. The accuracy and range of these missiles is something that was obviously manufactured elsewhere, and Dave, based on his sources, believes it's very likely that these missiles originated in Iran or in factories controlled by Iran.
Yeah, I think there's very little doubt about that, and evidently that was exactly what the facility that was struck by someone, we assume by the Israelis, in Sudan was involved in as well. Fred, one of the other issues that I know you're following closely at Lignet.com, and we all should be, is what's happening to one of Iran's other partners. And again, there's some reason to believe that taking the pressure off of Syria was one of the reasons why the Iranians would have an interest in having Hamas light up Gaza at the moment. But we've had a new group formed with a lot of Western, including U.S. participation, to ostensibly represent both those inside Syria and those outside of Syria who are seeking the overthrow of Bashar Assad. Some European governments, notably France and the United Kingdom, have now recognized this group as the legitimate government of Syria. What do we know about the people who are making up this group, and how advisable, in your estimation, is it, Fred, that we actually follow the lead of these Europeans in embracing them?
Well, this is one of the few things that the Obama administration has done in the Middle East that I really agree with. They've been reluctant to recognize a new coalition of Syrian opposition groups that was agreed to last week. The Syrian opposition has been divided almost since the outset. They're divided along religious lines, regional lines. There are radical Islamists. There are people who want to set up an Islamist state. There's people who want to set up a non-religious democracy. They've been feuding with each other. There's the Kurds have been feuding with the rest of the country. They've been feuding with each other for a long time. The United States, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia put a lot of pressure on these groups to try to come up with a coalition that would work together and form a government in exile, which they have not done yet. The French were the first to recognize this group. The EU recognized it this week. I think the British are soon going to recognize it, but I think their recognition is fairly certain. The problem is that this group still has shown indications that it is not together. And there's real concerns about who are some of the major players in here, which of them are radical Islamists, which of them are planning on using this coalition to set up an Islamic state after the fighting is done. And if this coalition is put together, will this be the excuse the world will use to arming this opposition? And what happens to those arms afterwards? We're seeing all these arms leaking out of Libya, going to terrorist groups, going to Gaza, going to Sinai. What would happen if any aircraft missiles or other significant weapons are given to this opposition group? That's something that the Obama administration has been resisting, and I think they're right.
Well, I hope you're right about that, Fred. I think there's some evidence that, in fact, they may have been providing some arms out of Libya themselves to these guys, but we're still waiting to get further clarification on all of that. But you also featured at Lignet.com, Fred Flights, a very interesting interview with the former head of Britain's armed forces, Field Marshal Charles Guthrie, warning about taking presumably yet another next step of actually getting involved on the ground in Syria. Tell us about his insights and what do you think are the prospects of us possibly getting involved in some fashion along those lines?
Lord Guthrie, who used to head Britain's armed forces under Tony Blair, is very, very worried that the West could be dragged into the Syria conflict on the ground or by employing airstrikes. And he just believes that this would alienate the Arab world, and it could draw us into a conflict that we're grossly underestimating in terms of how long we would be there, the casualties that Western troops would involve. He just strongly advised that the West has to stay out of this conflict.
Right. I couldn't agree more. Fred Flights, we have only a minute or so left. Quickly, one of the other interesting subjects that you cover at Lignet.com, of course, is China and the rising threat therefrom. You have a photograph, and it causes a double take to people like myself, of what looks to all the world like a Predator drone that it is now called a Petasar, I believe, or Ptetasar, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, that the Chinese seem to have reversed engineered with considerable effect from our Predator. You're a specialist, Fred, in your previous life in proliferation of technologies. You know a lot about reverse engineering. What are the Chinese up to? How good is it? And how much of a problem does it represent to us?
Well, there was an air show in Zhuhai, China last week, and China showed a model of a stealth jet that it's building that's based on stolen U.S. technology. And they showed what you said seems to be an exact copy of a Predator drone. Now, some people are saying, well, you know, this might just be a mock-up. How far could they get? China is selling these drones. We think they've been sold to the UAE and possibly to Uzbekistan. China is probably going to exploit the technology from the RQ-170 stealth drone that landed in Iran last year. They are using espionage. They are using reverse engineering, and they're rapidly approaching U.S. Technological capabilities. They're nowhere near our level yet, but they're working very hard to get there.
And in the hands of folks like those you've mentioned and some that we could also imagine would be happy to purchase these are really, really dangerous instruments. Fred Flights, as always, thank you for joining us. Thanks for the work you do at Lignet.com. Folks, check it out, please. And Fred, we'll look forward to talking with you again next week. Next up, we'll speak with Bill Gertz, who will take us, as he does each week, inside the ring. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to the Gospel.
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Bill Gertz, our featured guest here in the Friday wrap-up. Bill is our duty expert on the phenomenon of what happens inside the ring, the subject of a column he's written for many years at the Washington Times. He is also the senior editor at the marvelous new Washington Free Beacon. And Bill, you have been covering intensively at the Beacon the sort of changing story of the memo that was used basically to disinform the Congress and the American people about what happened when the non-consulate, the diplomatic mission, was attacked on September 11th in Benghazi, Libya. Give us your sense of now who was responsible for changing the story and misleading the public.
Well, we still don't know, and that's what the real problem is. What has transpired over the last several days has been a very significant back and forth between intelligence officials and policy officials over who was behind what I consider to be politicization of intelligence regarding the description of the September 11th attack on the diplomatic compound in Benghazi. And it's significant in the fact that, as I've been writing all along, we're finally starting to get some clarity about what was changed, and now we're trying to figure out why it was changed. And to me, the latest has been that the Director of National Intelligence, this intelligence czar, which is really kind of a superfluous and bureaucratic position more than anything else, is the place where the words about Al-Qaeda and terrorism were omitted from the public talking points drafted by the CIA, and instead the word extremism. And this has been code for the Obama administration's efforts to play down the Islamic jihadist nature of the terrorist war that we're facing. And I think that we caught them on this. And it's really, there's been a lot of confusion about this issue, and I think it's really significant that we identify that there was a politicization of intelligence. They were trying to tell it like it was, but because the president had spoken weeks earlier at the Democratic National Convention in telling everyone that Al-Qaeda is, quote, on the path to defeat, here we have an Al-Qaeda attack, and they for political reasons, prior to an election, they omitted that.
Bill Kurtz, I'm so glad that, as usual, you've back the lens up and given us a bit of perspective on this. I couldn't agree with you more that there's a politicization of intelligence going on here. This isn't, of course, the first time. As you know, Bill, back in February of 2011, this same Lieutenant General James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, read, it appeared, misleading information to the Congress, in that case the House Intelligence Committee, about the nature of the Muslim Brotherhood, calling it a largely secular organization that had eschewed violence. Bill, you, I think, have got perfectly calibrated the nature of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Do you think that what we're seeing here is really not just incompetence, but a subservience of the intelligence community through the office of General Clapper to the political authorities in a way that really is corrupting the intelligence and, again, misleading the Congress and the public?
Absolutely. And the American people should be outraged. Our representatives in Congress should be outraged, and they should demand answers on what happened here. I mean, this is a scandal of the highest magnitude. You have four Americans killed in an attack. The president didn't react right, didn't send a rescue force. The people who were on the ground knew they were threatened, asked for greater security support, and didn't get it. And so this is not a trivial matter, and I'm literally appalled at some of the news media coverage that has really failed to aggressively pursue this story for obvious political reasons. That is, I think the liberal-dominated media is basically running interference for the Obama administration in trying to cover this up, and it's just outrageous.
It certainly did prior to the election. There's no doubt about that, and with, I think, predictable effects in helping get the president reelected. And Bill Kurtz, it's one of the reasons why we really prize what you and the Washington Free Beacon have been doing to go where the rest of the press will not, despite their real duty to do so. Bill, let me turn to a different part of the world. You've spent much of your professional life as an investigative reporter covering what's happening in Asia, and specifically the rise of China and the failure of the United States government under successive administrations, frankly, to address it properly. We had President Obama there this week, not in China, but elsewhere in Southeast Asia. And you report that one of the things that happened on the eve of his meeting with one of the really ugly regimes in the region, namely that of Cambodia, to the people of the dissidents, most especially of that country. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I'm always one who believes that we shouldn't forget the past. And in this case, we have the president visiting Cambodia, and the government there, the regime of Hun Sen, basically conducting a major crackdown on dissidents, imprisoning some. There have been reports of, earlier assassinations going back over the last year. And this all took place before the president visited and had a meeting with this former Khmer Rouge leader. That's the significant part. The Hun Sen was a leader of the Khmer Rouge. That is the Red Khmers, the Vietnamese-backed government that conducted a genocide that killed 2 million people in that country. And You know, to have a regional summit and to have a president go there and give legitimacy to that kind of a regime is just really shameful, in my view.
It is appalling. And at the very least, one might say it is a bit troubling that his legitimation of the regime in Burma, which has engaged in all of that and more, may be at the very least premature in terms of the kinds of progress that he wanted to make much of while he was there. But staying with Cambodia for a moment, Cambodia was also the scene of Phnom Penh, as you know, Bill Gertz, this week of a meeting of the so-called ASEAN nations. And they were there to talk about the claims that China is making to the South China Sea at the expense of the territorial rights and claims of other nations, including many of them in ASEAN. This got quite testy for the second time in 5 months. And Bill Gertz, given your understanding of the extent to which the United States is not playing the kind of role that it needs to in a very strategic part of the world, how do you see this shaking out? Will China ultimately have its way with these much weaker nations?
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly what's happening. The Obama administration is taking the acquiescent role, the leading from behind role, not asserting leadership. This is what the nations of Asia want very badly, for the U.S. to step up and prevent China from exercising hegemony over that region. And they are doing this by demanding that there not be any ASEAN coordination in dealing with China's territorial claims. China has claimed something upwards of 70 to 80% of the South China Sea, which are not its territory, and yet it is making these outrageous territorial claims and threatening and in some cases shooting the nationals of several nations that have tried to engage in fishing and other commercial activities there. Of course, there's also energy resources in the South China Sea. This is a growing dispute, and we haven't seen real leadership from the Obama administration, and we didn't see it from the president during this visit.
Right. And in addition to all the points that you've just made, 50% or so of the world's trade transits those waters and makes it that much more imperative that we be engaged and have the capability to be engaged in the region at a time when China is increasingly sensing our weakness and asserting its own, as you say, hegemony. Bill Gertz, the author of 6 very important books, including most recently The Failure Factory: How Unelected Bureaucrats, Liberal Democrats, and Big Government Republicans Are Undermining America's Security and Leading Us to War. Also the author, of course, of the Inside the Ring column at the Washington Times, and innumerable superb contributions at the Washington Free Beacon. Bill, we look forward to talking with you again next week. Thank you for joining us. We look forward to talking to the rest of you as well. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.